This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
Science hunts Amazon Gilman in the most astounding expedition of our time.
This is exactly as it was 150 million years ago when it was part of the Devonian era.
As man continues his conquest of the unknown, daring underwater adventurers challenge the world's most treacherous waters to find the only living link with the beginning of time. Creature from the Black Lagoon, rising from the monstrous depths to astound and terrorize the world.
No!
Feel the frightening fury of a man-beast, aroused to strange emotions by its first sight of a woman.
BFM 89.9, it's coming up to 7:38 and you are listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn Sharmila and Arvin. And we are talking today about science fiction. We've been talking all week, in fact, about science fiction, but today we're going into it for one whole hour. Before that, though, before we start getting into the nitty-gritty of it, they don't make trailers like they used to, huh?
That is exactly what I was thinking. Like, I want that, the random echo, the imperious voice telling you what you're actually watching right then. No, it's great. And I think that there's that particular alarmist science fiction tone from the 1950s that I love. That really, like, when I hear it, reminds me of movies like Creatures from the Black Lagoon, The Incredible Shrinking Man. Those Jack Arnold classics that really set that particular tone for what science fiction initially was.
I don't know what you guys are talking about. That sounded like a documentary to me. it looks like we're going to cover... It sounded like science, actual science. But no, I think like sci-fi as a genre itself is like really interesting because it's able to be a mishmash of different genres all at once. So it's very fluid, very loose in the way it defines itself, right? And in that sense, I don't think any other genre does that as well. Like you think of like Jurassic Park. And on the surface, you don't think of Jurassic Park as a sci-fi film, but it is a very, very sci-fi movie. And I think if you go back and then look at the movies that you've seen, or at least the ones that I've seen, I didn't realize that a lot of the stuff that I watched were actually sci-fi films because of that genre-bending thing that it does.
So I think the main thing about sci-fi and the reason why I like it so much is in part because of the fact that, I think, it is based on a central question of what if, which so much of storytelling is really about, right? When we look at the impetus for most stories, whether it's a rom-com, whether it's an action movie, it always begins with a what if. What if a ragtag boy makes his way onto the Titanic right before it's about to set off? What happens then? You know, and sci-fi just takes it to that next level. It looks at what currently exists. It looks at science and the kind of genius and ideas that power it and power its theories, and then goes, okay, I see you. Now what if?
No, I love that. And I agree with you. That's exactly the appeal of science for me. I hated science when I was in school. I hated the way it was taught. And I thought that was because I was just not built to love things to do with science until I started reading science fiction. And then I realized I absolutely loved the possibilities that science can lend, the drama of things that it can do. And if we look at a lot of the questions we talk about now, whether artificial intelligence or the possibility of living on a different planet, these are questions that, you know, just decades ago seemed like the things that would never happen. People thought of them as squarely fictional. And now they've come to pass. I think there's something really exciting and magical about science fiction as a genre. And I think that's also why, to bring it back to what you said, Arvin, it lends itself so well to so many kinds of storytelling, because the what if doesn't only have to be what if we invented a robot that can do your work for you. It can also be what if you fall in love in a world that is like this? What if your idea of what it means to be a family was revolving around these issues instead of the things that you thought, the things that you normally think about? That's why I think science fiction isn't even a genre in some ways. It's actually larger in many sense than just being genre.
Yeah, and I think like the best kind of sci-fi experience, and it doesn't happen always, but it's when you go into a movie blind and you're not sure which genre it fits into. And I'm thinking about something like Underwater. And that movie, I didn't know that that was a sci-fi film going in. So it looked like one of those expedition movies where you sort of like, you know, they are looking for something or they get stuck somewhere. There's some kind of, it's a disaster movie, right? And then it quickly pivots into being sci-fi, which got me thinking, like, any movie that moves normally and then switches to a sci-fi direction is always better in a way. It's always more fun when something that is not sci-fi becomes sci-fi because of the thing that you said, because of the big what if that shows up.
I wanted to jump in and just say, I don't want to spoil it for anyone, but The Prestige, I did not see it coming. And yes, it was amazing.
So that's interesting because sometimes I really like sci-fi movies that start out being science fiction. We spoke a couple of days ago about Blade Runner. And actually, that watch that I had of that movie over the weekend has continued to permeate through the week. Every time I see something, I'm like, yeah, but are you Blade Runner? I think not. And I think part of the reason why it is so evocative is because it does such a good job of evoking the world. And it does that by not pretending to be anything other than what it is, right? It is a science fiction movie. You know that from the start with its 1982 vision of what 2019 could be, with its projections and its flying cars and all the rest of it. And there's a time where I do prefer just that full immersion into weirdness. However, it does have to be done very, very well, which I think is a broader science fiction issue in that whatever we're talking about, beyond the older stuff, I think, and as our world has gotten more touchscreeny and we're all a little more familiar with tech and science, more than ever, I think the science of it needs to be accurate and look good.
I think that's definitely something we need to discuss a little further, because how science do you need your science fiction to be? How real does it need to be? And I think we really need to remember that science fiction had its roots in fiction, in actual books. And they were often written in the early days by people who were also either actual scientists in real life or had a lot of knowledge in the field of science. And I find that important. I often find that I get annoyed by half-baked ideas of, I'm just going to make this look science fiction-y, but actually none of my ideas really hold up. I like for, even if it is Jurassic Park, for it to be a possibility that you can extract DNA from amber and make a dinosaur. I don't want you to not explain to me how it happens.
So that's the thing. For me personally, I feel like the more science-y it is, the slightly more boring it gets. Unless you are a really good filmmaker and you know how to handle that. But if you are in science fiction, then you have to sort of like balance it, at least lean more 60% into the fiction bit and 40% into science. I feel like if that balance, you cannot strike that balance and it's more, you try to ground the movie too much, it ends up being sort of dry or slow, or the pacing is just kind of off. But that's just me.
So we're going to get into some favorites after this and talk a little bit more about this idea, I think. How much science do we need in our science fiction? And also, judging from some of the messages that we're getting, how do we separate science fiction from something that it is often conflated with, which is fantasy fiction as well as dystopian fiction? So that's what we're going to be getting into, but keep those thoughts coming. What are your favorite sci-fi watches, whether on television or in film? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. For this side of things, we are going to be closing off this little segment with one of the all-time greats. Here is a little bit of 2001 Space Odyssey.
Open the pod bay doors, please, Hal. You read me, Hal?
Affirmative, Dave. I read you.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
What's the problem?
I think you know what the problem is just as well as I do.
What are you talking about, Hal?
This mission is too important for me to allow you to jeopardize it.
I don't know what you're talking about, Hal.
I know that you and Frank were planning to disconnect me. And I'm afraid that's something I cannot allow to happen. Although you took very thorough precautions in the pod against my hearing you, I could see your lips move.
All right, Hal. I'll go in through the emergency airlock.
Without your space helmet, Dave, You're going to find that rather difficult. Dave, this conversation can serve no purpose anymore. Goodbye.
Al? Al? Al?
Break from monotony. BFM 89.9.
Space, a final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
BFM 89.9, it is 7:48. This is Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Sharmila and Arvin. Another installment in the Man, They Don't Make Them Like They Used To catalogue. That is such a great opening. I mean, I know that the premise of Star Trek is something that is still contained within all the various iterations of it, right? Whether it's the feature-length films, whether or not it's the shows. But there's something about hearing it laid out like that, along with the little theme kicking in at the end, that just makes me nostalgic.
Star Trek might actually have been my earliest intro into sci-fi, because my dad was a huge Trekkie. So it was always on TV, on some version or the other. But I also wanted to say Star Trek is a great example that sci-fi doesn't always have to be difficult or dark or hopeless. Because the one thing I love about Star Trek, as I've gotten older, I think I've loved it more and more. And, you know, Gene Roddenberry himself has said this, that he wanted to imagine a world where people were equal, where people were treated as, you know, despite your differences, everyone looking different or being different, but could work together and live in some sort of unity. And I think whatever we might take away from that, there's something very hopeful about Star Trek that still permeates that universe. And I get it. I get why people are such diehard fans of it.
So I think Star Trek is on the opposite end of the spectrum of what we were talking about before. Like, how much science do you want in your science fiction, right? And for me, it's like 20% science and maybe 80% fiction. And it sort of, it tries to ground it with like science that could happen, might happen, like, you know, hundreds of years from now. And I think that's why I don't like Star Trek. It's too much. It looks like it came out of it looks like it works better in a book. And I've always felt that way. I've never been able to watch any episodes in sequence. I've never been able to finish any kind of Star Trek. I've never been a fan.
You're going to get hunted down, you realize.
But yeah, you know, it's, and I think even if you look at like the popularity of Star Trek versus Star Wars, it says a lot because of that same thing, because of the amount of quote-unquote science fiction in Star Trek that it seeks to versus the science fantasy of Star Wars. It's something that, for me, it's difficult to get into, especially because that balance is very lopsided in Star Trek specifically.
So what I like about Star Trek primarily is the fact that it's the format, right? So every episode has that comforting TV format that I enjoy. And like you said earlier, Sharmila, I like the premise. So while Star Wars is a space melodrama Western opera, Star Trek is a little bit more, weirdly enough, down to earth, right? It has workplace conflict. It has yes. Just all these little things. And there's something about that I like. Like I said, my preference for science fiction is to be dropped into something. And so I think Star Trek does it for me. I have also not watched it in sequence. So when fans start talking about the great episode 423 or, you know, something in that vein, I am not there with them. But if there's an episode of Star Trek on, I'm perfectly happy to watch. Out of sequence, whatever. It does work for me on that level.
I think that question of being dropped into something, right? And that's something science fiction, almost by the nature of it, has to do well, because it has to do world building. You cannot have science fiction that doesn't create a plausible world that you believe these things can happen in. And I think things like Star Trek, even back then, you know, even when the effects were janky, even when we didn't really know whether what they were talking about was possible or not, there's a sense of realness, to me at least, that brought. But I wanted to say that TV can get away with a lot, I think. I mean, one of my favorite shows growing up was actually Quantum Leap. I used to love Quantum Leap and Scott Bakula. And I think there's a comfort to that TV formula where you can slowly, piece by piece, add things to this world that science fiction lends itself to very well.
I'm going to say something else and think people hate me more. My favorite Star Trek is actually Into Darkness. And that's one of the
it's
only...
Like you're trying to be aggravating.
One of the only ones that I've seen in full. And I love that movie. I actually love that movie.
I hate that movie so much. I had to try and remember what you're talking about.
Benedict Cumberbatch, that one.
I like him, but that was about it.
So I think Star Trek is one of the few things that sort of elevated sci-fi from being schlocky and pulpy, because by definition it was, right? Like back then, sci-fi was very pulpy, very schlocky. It's the kind of stuff that tabloids were made of, like aliens and secret dimensions and time travel and stuff. And I think content like Star Trek and programs like Star Trek and a few filmmakers like Ridley Scott, Stanley Kubrick, they gave sci-fi sort of class and quality, and they sort of elevated it out of that schlockiness. But at the same time, they knew how to infuse it with just enough pulp to leave it, like, you know, feeling like sci-fi. And I think that's an actual skill, to a point that I think stuff like Ex Machina is possible because of shows like Star Trek. If that didn't happen, we wouldn't have like prestige sci-fi that we have today.
So a couple of Star Trek tweets. E Macro says, Star Trek is real science. Also, we have a Malaysian captain in there. And then...
There you go, Arvind.
Take that. Magpie, more neutral. Sometimes Star Trek has a Twilight Zone-ish vibe. And I think that they are, they are contemporary. So that's definitely why we see that coming through. Now, just to get to some of the messages and tweets that we've been getting, because it's quite a number. So on WhatsApp, we have JW, who says Inception, a masterpiece from Christopher Nolan.
So Christopher Nolan is so interesting, right? Because actually what he's making are science fiction films, but they're never really sold as science fiction films, which I think is really clever, because sometimes it pigeonholes it into maybe not quite appealing to that blockbuster market.
You know why? Because he's good at the techno jargon. He's good at saying things that don't make any sense, but it sounds like it could make sense.
Even within the movie, when he starts to explain things, i.e.
the whiteboard comes out.
Oh, no, I'm thinking about Tenet and a bullet just moving and him going, I get it. And I'm like, good for you. You're the only one. But, you know, I think that Christopher Nolan definitely plays in that realm. And part of why he gets away with it is because he doesn't center the science. Instead, he often uses the science as a jumping off point instead to explore other things. Now, because of that, I hesitate to call him hardcore sci-fi. Even though science is an important element in really most of his films, I don't know if I would consider him generically sci-fi.
I think Christopher Nolan, and I hate using this word, I don't mean it as a downplaying of what he does. Pop science, I think, suits what he does. He basically takes pop science concepts, things like dreams and you know, levels of dreams and dreams within dreams and whatever. But he actually crafts a really strong story out of it. And the pop part, I think, is important because pop science appeals to a much wider audience. And I think it feels more relatable to people compared to hard science.
Oh, this is like really interesting, because for me, Christopher Nolan is a sci-fi purist. Something like Interstellar. I think the first 2 hours of Interstellar is some of the best sci-fi that we've had in the last maybe 25 years, clean sci-fi. And then the last maybe half an hour, without spoiling it, goes way off on a tangent. I love it, but it starts to really flexla, and then it bends the imagination and stuff. And a lot of other movies actually use that same template, like Contact does it, Arrival does it, Annihilation does it, where it sticks to one rule of sci-fi, and then towards the end, the exclamation point is something else completely. So I don't know. For me, I feel Christopher Nolan is sort of like a classic sci-fi guy. He follows he's more of a book guy than a Hollywood guy.
So
that makes sense.
There are so many things that I want to pick up from that, but part of it is how science fiction, as we said at the start, can be a jumping off point to explore themes that go far beyond the science itself. And one of the things that does that best. So we do have this message from Edelweiss, who says, my favorite sci-fi series is Black Mirror, and they are not so fictiony. So we are going to be closing out this section. We have a lot to say about Black Mirror. We can come back to that as well. Keep those recommendations coming, though. What are your favorite sci-fi watches? And do you think Christopher Nolan is a science fiction filmmaker? Weigh in. Let us know. That number to call, 7733-2900. WhatsApp, 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio.
In this world, we're all so caught up in our own heads. It's easy to lose sight of what's real.
You said you don't know how much time there is. What does that mean?
It's important that you realize there is a small medical procedure involved.
Sorry for a game?
I didn't expect to find myself living in the future, but here I f***ing well am.
So you recently logged your first kill?
Huh?
And how did that feel?
They filmed me.
Filmed you?
Through my computer camera.
Bringing fresh meaning. BFM 89.9.
The Matrix is a system, Neo. That system is our enemy. But when you're inside, you look around, what do you see? Businessmen, teachers, lawyers, carpenters. The very minds of the people we are trying to save. But until we do, these people are still a part of that system, and that makes them our enemy. You have to understand, most of these people are not ready to be unplugged. And many of them are so inert, so hopelessly dependent on the system, that they will fight to protect it. Were you listening to me, Neo? Or were you looking at the woman in the red dress?
I was...
Look again. Freeze it.
What are you trying to tell me? That I can dodge bullets?
No, Neo. I'm trying to tell you that when you're ready, you won't have to.
Words of wisdom. It is 8:07 and you are listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn Shyamalan Arvin, and together we are doing a grand supercut of science fiction, something that almost since the inception of our show, I think we've been wanting to do. And, you know, listening to that first had me thinking about how we collectively had an existential crisis on radio the other day talking about Blade Runner, and The Matrix is one of those movies that tends to prompt that same impulse, right? Of, well, how do I know? Well, how would I know? And the answer is, that way lies madness.
Oh, no. And I have long decided that I'm one of those lame-ass people who are just going to remain in the Matrix because I just can't deal with what the real world is. But that said, I remember watching Matrix for the first time in the cinema, just being mind blown, like as every scene unfolded. You know, every generation has a few of those movies. Matrix is definitely one of mine. Just that sensation of watching something so singularly different.
No, I'm like completely with you. If you showed me The Matrix, I'm like, no, I'm out. Like, just plug me back in. You know, I don't need to see any of these things. But yeah, so The Matrix is one of those things where you can pluck like any scene, any sequence, any sentence, and it is so, it's sweat sci-fi. It is so dipped and it bleeds, it sweats, it drips sci-fi. Every kind of concept, everything they get like inspiration from, everything they are based on. It is one of the best sort of genre-defining movies, I think, that has come out in, what, the last 30 years? How old is the first Matrix? It came out in 1997. So,
yes.
Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to say about The Matrix is that one of the great things about science fiction, and we've been talking quite a lot about science, we've been talking a lot about the possibilities of storytelling that it opens up, but also, something to note, I think, is that science fiction movies, perhaps, I want to say more than other genres, pushes visual boundaries. Because if you think about some of the movies that we're discussing, whether it's Christopher Nolan from earlier, whether it's The Matrix, these are singular moments in terms of where we found ourselves what we were able to express on screen visually. And the reason why they pushed it was because the story demanded it. And so I think that's the great thing about science fiction, is that oftentimes, in order to get that true suspension of disbelief, but also for you to believe that the science behind it is valid and that there's some solidity behind it, you need to have the visuals match up. And because of that, as a genre, it's really pushed visual mastery quite far forward.
So the flip side of that, though, is what you just said. You said because the story demanded it. I think, though, we've now come to a place where technology and CGI can do so much on screen that there is almost a lack of regard for whether the story demands it. They now do it because they can. They do it because it's easy. They do it because it's cheap. But I don't think that often a lot of the stuff now that is passed off as science fiction holds to that depth of needing something to look that way because that's what the story needs. Now it's just all flash without a lot of depth. I don't mean to sound like I'm, 500 years old, but I think there is some sense of a little bit of disrespect for what science fiction can be on screen, primarily because it's become so easy and fairly common to realize those things on screen now.
No, yeah, like completely agree. And I think that's because people put the focus on the wrong things when it comes to sci-fi. And they think it's all about the aesthetics and the sound and the way it looks. And it's because of movies like Blade Runner, right? When in actual fact, and I think we spoke about this when doing the Blade Runner review, all the best sci-fi were built on a lot of limitations. Like they had either like limited resources, like you said, limited CGI, you know, they were made in a time when CGI wasn't the thing. So they had to like think out of the box on how they wanted to create these worlds and tell these stories and stuff. And even 2001, A Space Odyssey, same thing, also built on a lot of limitations, just genius filmmakers finding new ways to tell these small stories in big ways. And I think a lot of people, like you said, nowadays they forget that, especially if you go on streaming services and the stuff that they let pass, a lot of the sci-fi stuff is really nothingness. And it just boils down to, it has no exclamation point at the end.
So you mentioned earlier Annihilation. And I love that movie because it hit several spots, right? It's on a streaming platform, which means that it could have just been part of the drivel that we see being released on them all the time because they are content farming machines. But instead, it hits that sweet spot of what we want, right? Meaning it tells a story and is supported by the visuals. It is supported by a strange science fiction premise. And everything about that is supporting this story, which is about science, but is also about psychological annihilation, hence the title. Mm-hmm. And so you're right. I completely agree with that. Broadly speaking, I think sometimes, just in general, we see CG for CG's sake, but when we see it done right, it can still be so incredibly breathtaking. I think we do have to get to some of the recommendations because they're so great. So Devon says, Gattaca, 1997, which is fantastic.
Oh, I love Gattaca. Gattaca is one of my favorite films. It didn't do so well when it came out, but that story of genes and selective, basically selecting what your children are like is something that feels ever more relevant, I think. And I think it's one of those films that will resonate for years and years to come.
That's another one of those existential crisis movies, like existential crisis in a box.
Yeah, unfortunately.
But as is a lot of sci-fi, actually. It makes you question your reality as you know it.
We also have Ming who says, I hope you guys have watched Fringe. It is the best father-son love story.
I love Fringe. I didn't get to the end of the series, but Fringe as a series, I love the idea of dimensions. I love the idea of people, and it's basically a sort of a cop drama, but structured within this interdimensional thing. It's such a great TV show. I'm so excited by all of these suggestions.
I've actually never seen Fringe. I think I was preoccupied with Lost at the time.
Mm, yeah, they were, again, contemporaries. We also have this message from Malik Ali in Singapore, who says, is The Fifth Element science fiction or fantasy fiction? And I'm going to say that it's a little bit of both, but it leans more heavily on science, I think, because there is a lot of that in there.
I agree. I think Fifth Element, I always think of it as science fiction, but now that Malik's brought it up, I feel like I need to rewatch it, you know, just because I want to, but to kind of figure out if I think it leans more fantasy.
I think Dune sort of falls in that same bracket, where it's kind of, it works like fantasy and behaves like fantasy, but it's actually science fiction.
I think also because going back to what we talked about earlier, the visuals are quite fantastical. And so because of that, it has that element of fantasy. But I mean, from what I remember of the story, and it's, I loved that movie when I first watched it. From what I remember, definitely science fiction. Now, we have a bunch of messages attacking Arvind. I apologize in advance.
I told you you were opening the floodgates.
So, Sebest says, you don't like Star Trek? You have no soul. Followed by huffy, angry emoji. What I love about Star Trek is it's so human. And then Maggie, to be fair, this is not hating on. This is just adding. So, Maggie says, agree about Star Trek's plus points. My favorite thing is the teleporting. Beam me up, Scotty. If we had that now, we wouldn't need to wait for buses to connect that last mile. And in fact, come to think of it, no traffic jams. Would Men in Black be considered sci-fi? I missed it when it first came out. I mean to seriously sit down to watch one, but somehow still haven't gotten around to it. And I think yes, I think so sci-fi. But on that point about missed it when it first came out and mean to sit down to watch one, Maggie, I would suggest you watch one.
Yes.
Men in Black, one is the only one. Are there others?
That's what I'm saying. I think that perhaps start at one, which is great, and then maybe leave it there. I mean, if you really enjoy the world, then they're really fun sort of meaningless watches. But the first one is actually legitimately great.
Men in Black is such a great great add to this conversation. And goes back to that question of genre. I always think of Men in Black as a fun buddy cop, funny adventure. But of course, it's sci-fi. Like when you stop and think about it, it is sci-fi, right?
Yeah. And also, like you said, don't do Men in Black International. Whatever you do, don't start with Men in Black International.
Yes. Cosine. Completely. We have this from Fa on Twitter who says Blade Runner. And I just wanted to bring that up because we can't seem to get enough of it. But if you did miss the show, we covered it on Tuesday in some detail and with some shaping of existential crises, ongoing wonderings about how memory is formed. Just, yeah, regular
normal
Tuesday.
Normal, everyday conversation.
That's what
and
I'd
every
say.
Tuesday.
We have Sui Lim who says, what about Interstellar? And to that, Arvin spoke at length about that earlier. And I think that it's such a good movie. And at least for a huge chunk of it, it asks important questions, I think, about how it is that we are taking care of Earth and also what would happen if we needed to leave it? It may, in fact, be, if we find a real-life analogy, Elon Musk, we're back there again.
You know, important questions, I think, is almost a byproduct of science fiction, because even the worst of the science fiction examples often ask really important questions about how we treat people, the kind of world we want, what our future holds, how do we deal with technology. In a way, I think that even the best of dramas sometimes can't quite encompass. And a lot of people are put off by the idea of science fiction, and I often try to sell the genre to them in this way, that actually in many ways, a genre that's perceived as being kind of cold and removed addresses things that are very, very human.
I think the perfect example of that is actually going back to Blade Runner and Blade Runner 2049. As much as I love 2049, like I adore that film, I think the reason why it isn't as good as the first Blade Runner is exactly because of what you said, you know, asking the big questions. And I think when you don't know which big question to ask, like the first Blade Runner, then it just kind of, like, it doesn't stick as much. Like, it doesn't create as much impact as the first one did.
Sometimes, and this is going all the way back to how we opened, but that what if and the idea of a thought experiment can reveal things about our society more so than if you did a hard-hitting drama, which perhaps, you know, is too close to home in some instances, right? Not everybody wants to sit down with their traumas for 2.5 hours. And I think the next clip that we have lined up is a great example of how you can tackle social issues in a very serious way through science fiction, even in a place like South Africa, where race is going to be one of the most touchy topics. And that is, of course, Neil Blomkamp's District 9.
Striking Next, the whole world is watching.
The course of human history has changed today.
The ship appears to be stopping over Johannesburg City.
They're spending so much money to keep them here when they could be spending it on other things. At least they're keeping them separate from us.
How do your weapons work?
We're coming to you from the entrance of District 9, the refugee camp set up to separate aliens from the general population.
Get the new agents! Open the door, please!
We're seeing heavily armed forces being deployed into District 9.
Nobody really knew what this place was.
Beyond Frivolous Matters, BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Human.
Oh my God.
Are you hitting this?
Yes, sir. It's uploading back to base camp.
Luis, that's incredible.
Human. Okay.
It is 8:22, and you are listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Sharmila, and Arvin. And today on our supercut, it is all science fiction all the time. And that clip, just hearing it, gives me chills and makes me want to cry. And I think that that is one of those times where you, for people who don't like sci-fi, I actually think that you could do far worse than get introduced to it through Denis Villeneuve's Arrival.
I love Arrival so much. It's not just one of my favorite sci-fi films. It's actually one of my favorite films of all time. And I think sci-fi gets a bad rap. It's often viewed as, and you said schlocky earlier, Arvind, but even though that's changed a bit, it's often viewed as niche. It's often viewed as more about style and visuals rather than the story. So Arrival is actually one of the few science fiction films to have gotten Oscar nominations, for instance. And even though that's a disservice, I think Arrival absolutely deserved it because of just how well it uses that idea of something that's pretty out there, of aliens, of communicating with aliens, but to tell a story that's so much about us and about how we communicate and what it means to connect with people. I don't know. I love that film so much. And it does everything that a sci-fi film should do, from the way it looks and feels and creates a world. But also, it's just such a great directed, performed film.
Arrival is proof that sci-fi has nothing to do with budget or big, like, bombastic creatures or weird creature feature effects and stuff. Because the aliens in Arrival don't look like much. They look interesting and they look very captivating, but they don't look like much. It doesn't look like a xenomorph, let's say. It's also proof that it has nothing to do with all the big budget Hollywood things. It's very simple. It's very to the point. The effects are, I think, easily done because of the way it's done. It's just proof that, you know, if you have a good story, and if you have good themes and you have good actors, that a sci-fi movie can really work. But on the flip side, it's also indicative of a problem in Hollywood that if you make a movie like that, a lot of people aren't going to go see it. So although it did well at the awards and it got a lot of praise and stuff, it isn't a blockbuster success. And it's
because
also
the trailer doesn't have explosions and
exactly
jumping through space.
No robots, no weird, like, you know, gun effects and space kung fu and stuff. It's a very, very straightforward sort of movie. And that's, I think that's a larger problem. But it also, it just goes to show that you can make these films. There's no guarantee it's going to do well at the box office at all.
So I think the other thing to say about Arrival is that it manages that balance because science fiction and science fiction and aliens in particular, right? The propensity is to look at it as a world-ending situation or to always put somewhere in peril, preferably Washington. But if not, then they'll just take some other big city. You know, but the idea is always that it's an existential threat. And what Arrival does is not take that away, but instead also reframe it as this, yes, as well as an intimate story, as well as a story about science, as well as a story about how science can change lives, can in fact better the world in intangible ways. I'm just going on about this because it didn't do well. And therefore, I think that a lot of people didn't manage to watch it. So if you did miss Arrival and you love sci-fi or you don't love sci-fi, still a great movie. We do also have lots of other messages, and one, actually a pair, really strongly recommending a series that I hadn't watched, so I wanted to read this out. We have Rowan, who says, I'm a huge fan of the Expanse series. The visuals and the universal story of war and love makes it entertaining. And then on Twitter, Sean says, the Expanse ruined my experience with sci-fi. I can't go back. It's really close to real-life science.
I've never watched the Expanse. I've seen so many clips from it, and I've seen people talking about it. I don't know why I haven't watched it, but I feel like now I should.
Same here. At that and Sense8. A lot of people have told me about Sense8 as well.
So Sense8 has mixed reviews though, which is kind of why I decided I would give that a miss.
Wachowski's, right?
Yeah.
We also have Intan Sabrina. Arvin, somebody's in your corner, man. So Intan Sabrina says, I'm with Arvin. Never liked Matrix or Star Trek. So it's a bit of a...
Matrix I don't know about. See, I love the Matrix.
This is just a half club now.
Yes, correct. Never liked Matrix or Star Trek. I love Fifth Element and Gattaca. So memorable forever. I hate Men in Black. So a big mix of both messages and stuff that Intan Sabrina does not like.
I know. I think that's an interesting example of the kind of science fiction I think Intan Sabrina does like, because Fifth Element and Gattaca are great sci-fi examples. So you can still join our little club, I think.
I'm willing to bet she hates Men in Black because of those coffee aliens that look kind of gross. And a lot of people don't like Men in Black because of those coffee aliens.
Actually,
at the coffee
really
machine.
They're quite horrible. Yeah. We have Desmond who says, I'm very much a fantasy fiction person. I never liked science fiction much. But after watching the first episode of Star Trek Discovery, I didn't want to stop.
Oh, you know, I haven't watched Star Trek Discovery and I really feel like I'm missing out.
Same.
We, meanwhile, have Daniel saying, what about Total Recall?
Oh, Total Recall. I love Total Recall. I mean, it's so 1980s sci-fi with all of the, and of course with Arnold Schwarzenegger, but I love it. I love Total Recall. I don't like the remake.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, no one's talking about the new one with Colin Farrell, right?
Yes. I think we're being quite specific to that moment in time. Ferdows Omar sent us a GIF of V from V for Vendetta. And that's an interesting one because I think that speaks to a conflation of science fiction and dystopia. Because dystopia, most dystopian worlds happen because of something fundamentally going wrong, whether because of science or politics. That seems to be the major drivers. But for me, V for Vendetta is primarily a political movie.
So that's similar to something like Hunger Games, right? Because it's set in a future. And because it's set in a future, there are certain technologies and certain elements of that world that are different from ours that are, well, futuristic. But they don't really rely on science as a basis for the story they're telling. So yeah, I would think that V as well as something like The Hunger Games are all much more of the dystopian genre.
But maybe if they had focused a bit on the technology, right? Then it would have been sci-fi.
Yeah, because most of them look futuristic, right? They take place in some future world in which things have gone terribly wrong. But I think the future part alone is not enough to qualify. Meanwhile, Shamil Razak, who I remember from last week talking about Doctor Who, coming back to say, nothing can beat 50 years of Doctor Who. fans are divided over which Doctor is the best, theorizing over long story arcs, blaming the showrunner when the story doesn't make sense. Doctor Who for the win. The best Doctor? Matt Smith's 11th Doctor.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's a hard recommendation. And I feel like now if I start, I will start with the Matt Smith one.
how long is it going to take to get to where you... Oh, so you're going to start with
the
Mets.
Yeah. So I've been told you don't necessarily have to start with the old, I don't know how many seasons ago one. Like, basically just pick a doctor and start, and I think it'll work.
Well, we have Anura who says, gosh, Doctor Who is so out there, responding to Shamil, but saying also, I've no clue what they're talking about, but the excitement around their adventures just has me glued. So there we go. Does anyone remember Sapphire and Steel? It's 70s sci-fi. It could have been the precursor to The X-Files, as well as Buck Rogers in the 25th Century and Battlestar Galactica.
I've only heard of Battlestar Galactica in that list, which again was another one of those that I never got into. But I know that there's huge fandom built around Battlestar Galactica.
The mention of X-Files, though, I'm surprised we didn't bring up X-Files. That's one of the most defining sci-fi shows.
That's true, right? Actually. Yeah. I was madly into X-Files every week. And that whole idea of the larger conspiracy and the truth is out there was just so seductive at a particular point in time.
The music.
Yes.
You know, that show has aged really interestingly because it hasn't aged poorly, but it's also not as infinitely rewatchable and seductive as it used to be. So when I watch past episodes, I recognize the show for the quality show that it is, but I no longer feel the same pull of, you're right, there is something wrong, go Mulder. And I'm not sure exactly what that is.
I think for me, the X-Files episodes that I find more interesting now are the standalone ones that are more Twilight Zone-ish almost, where it's like an issue of the week. I don't find the overarching conspiracy as interesting, and maybe because we've just watched too many of variations of that.
I think for me, it just went on for a bit too long. So they started to recycle sci-fi tropes and that sort of got stale and boring after a while.
Kenny on Twitter sent a GIF of Flash Gordon, which is fantastic.
Wow.
And then Danny says, I remember this classic 1980s film, Krull, that has that element of both fantasy and sci-fi. At the beginning of the film, it has that Lord of the Rings feel of this League of Adventurers teaming up to save a kidnapped princess. It has a stellar cast that also includes Liam Neeson and Robbie Coltrane. The antagonist in the film is the Beast and his army of slayers who invaded the planet of Krull and enslaved its population. As for world-ending sci-fi, Independence Day, best guilty pleasure film to sit back and enjoy the action, best buddy combo of Will Smith and Jeff Goldblum.
We had one show where Arvind hadn't mentioned Independence Day, and now...
Wait, so the mention of Independence Day, right? I have a question. So we've sort of like, we know that Godzilla is sci-fi, kind of, because of its origins.
Mm.
Jurassic Park is sci-fi, so we've established that. King Kong is not, it's more fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
So what is Godzilla versus Kong? Genre-wise?
Well, that would be fantasy then, right?
It falls under fantasy?
I don't know. Does it cancel each other out? That's an interesting question.
I think that it just negates everything by virtue of being a creature feature. In the simple sense that nobody's actually interested in the fantasy of the situation because nobody cares anymore how Kong came to be and nobody cares anymore how Godzilla came to be. It's just the fact that they're both there and they're going to beat the hell out of each other, you know, and that... fundamentally is the appeal of a creature feature, right?
Yeah. And I was going to say that the opposite of that is probably something like Pacific Rim, which I love. I love Pacific Rim, which for all intents and purposes could be a creature feature. But I think because it is very science-y in the way it tells its story, so that I think, you know, immediately my head would classify that under sci-fi.
I would have never thought of Pacific Rim as sci-fi, but you're right. Yeah, 100%. Because of the mech and the tech and the robots and stuff, yeah.
Wisely says, Demolition Man is really something that will and is happening now. You know, no touching, for example, and video calls were already introduced in the movie. I hate it when we get all dystopian. As in when we, literally the world we're living in, matches up to movie dystopias. It's so, oof.
I think the last year in particular, I've had this sensation of a lot of the things that is life, just normal life now, this new normal, feeling like things I read or watched in some of my back then favorite sci-fi books or movies, and now not really loving it so much anymore.
That happened with Black Mirror. So we played the clip earlier and I was like, I can't watch that anymore because of the tech and the scary data, quote unquote, and the other just because of the year we've had. I'm like, nope, not for me. I'll give it a break.
Lin Jerin on Twitter says, Ready Player One, you have gaming, pop culture references, Iron Giant and Gundam.
Oh, Ready Player One was a fun one. It's not something I immediately think of, but it's, you know, it's Spielberg and it's a genre that he does so well. And it looks great. I think it's one of the best looking sci-fi films I've seen in recent times.
You gotta love the self-referencing also.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's Spielberg. He's gotten there, I think.
The Deadpooling of the whole thing, yeah. Isn't it a lot of fantasy also, Ready Player One? It has a lot of elements of fantasy in a way.
I think because it's folded into the game and the game universe, so it feels more like it's science. Hmm.
So we're running out of time. I'm just going to run through the rest. Give a shout if you want to weigh in. Alfred says, Arrival, best combination of the thinking man's movie and sci-fi. Loke says, I think some who didn't like The Matrix could be because of not fully understanding it. I see that, but I also think some parts of The Matrix are gross.
Oh yeah, and I get some people just don't like that kind of film. It's just a weird thing to get behind.
Yeah, when you're not in The Matrix, life is hard. And so I think that part's quite hard to look at. Christopher says The 11th Hour. Alta says Space 1999, Lost in Space, both great. Danny says Godzilla vs. King Kong is sci-fi fantasy. Pacific Rim is a fanboy film for all boys who love giant robot anime. Maggie says, this is great. I remember Sapphire and Steel, but try Martin Landau's Space 1999. We had Thunderbirds and a puppet TV series in black and white. I'm glad I've lived to see such fantastic changes in filmmaking. And lastly, Ming says, no one brought up Firefly. Space Western, talk about yes. genre mashup.
Yes, no one brought up Firefly and neither did we. And suddenly I feel like I've done such a disservice to a series that I love so, so much. Firefly is great. I mean, if you love space adventure and if you love cowboy westerns and just a great, that idea of a great crew traveling together, visiting different worlds, I love Firefly. I couldn't recommend it enough.
Firefly should have been made today. I think it would have done a lot better than it actually did because of the whole, you know, Firefly got cancelled thing. But it should have been made today on a streaming service. It would have done well.
Last message, I think. Loke says 12 Monkeys, which, yes, another one that I can't believe we didn't bring up. Speaking of, we're saving time travel films for their own supercut because there are so many, but it's impossible to talk about sci-fi without bringing up at least one. So we're going to be closing up with a film from Rian Johnson that we all really enjoyed, and that is Looper. Keep those recommendations coming, though. Sci-fi, send them our way. The weekend beckons. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. Write to us at movies@bfm.my. And also find us at BFM Popcorn on both Twitter and Instagram.
Time travel has not yet been invented. But 30 years from now, it will have been. I am one of many specialized assassins in our present called Loopers. So when criminal organizations in the future need someone gone, they zap him back to me. And I eliminate the target from the future.
Oh la la.
Loopers are well paid. We live the good life. And the only rule is, never let your target escape. Even if your target is you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.